Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on this Thursday, July the 14th, 2022, 13 minutes past the hour, 64 degrees, and let me tell you, foggy skies here in Marion. Maybe not so much foggy skies, maybe foggy on the ground today here in Marion. I went to get my diet soda this morning, and it is a thick fog here in the city. I can't imagine what it's like out in the county, so stay safe wherever you are. We've got a great program for you here today. I'm going to tell you what's coming up in hour number one momentarily, but in hour number two today, we are going to explore the idea, continue to explore the idea of Marion becoming a charter city. Yesterday, we had Pastor Brett Cornelius, who is a city council person at large on. He is a big proponent for the charter city, Marion becoming a charter city. Monday night, it passed committee and now is before a vote of the entire city council to see if it will go on the November ballot. City council would have to pass that with a two-thirds vote, which is quite a bit. They can only lose three votes not to pass. And time is of the essence because they would have to have that passed before August the 10th. To make the November ballot. So next hour, we're going to hear, not necessarily from opposition, but we're going to hear from people who also might be voting in this. I'm not going to give away who the guests are next hour. Just stay tuned, and we're going to continue the Charter City conversation. And it's something you'll want to hear because some of it is a little different than what we heard yesterday. But hour number one here, we are joined by a guest who has been on this program several times. You hear him on this station most every Wednesday from 12:15 until 1 p.m. with Glenn Coble on A Progressive Life. I believe his last appearance on this program was in December of 2021, so it's been about 7 months since he's been on. It's always fun to have a conversation with him. He is the Progressive Professor, author, Dr. Ronald Fineman. Dr. Fineman, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I want to thank you again for inviting me.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. And I figure right off the bat here, since before we get into the heavy-duty stuff, you and I have been having... You and I don't have the conversation. We kind of have it through Glenn. So I figure right off the top here...
How about John Adams?
Yeah, John Adams. Now, here's my contention, because maybe I'm not making the clear picture here about John Adams. What I'm saying about John Adams is I'm not saying that he's the greatest president of all time. I'm not even saying that he's not one of my favorites. What I'm saying is I find it interesting that Washington and Jefferson are seen in such high regard when, if there had not been John Adams, neither one of them would have happened.
Well, I wouldn't go that far to say it wouldn't have happened, but I think he did have a major contribution to promote Washington to lead the troops and for Jefferson to be the prime author of the Declaration. But I don't know if I would say without him that they wouldn't have accomplished. That, I think, goes a little too far.
Here's my, and we're going to wrap this up quick because there's so much current stuff to talk about. But
yes. But
it's my understanding, and you know, I'm not the history professor, but I like history and I've studied a lot of it, that Washington did not want to lead the Revolutionary War army. And a matter of fact, when he went in, he was going in to tell him he didn't want to do it. And Adams was the one who led the charge. You are the guy to do this. And
That's true. What you're saying now is true. So that's why he had a contribution to make. But again, when we rank people in history, we don't just rank them on that. We rank them on their years in office, their whole story of their life. And, of course, I know Washington and Jefferson were slave owners, and that's horrendous, and Adams was not. But the point is they served 8 years in office, each of them, and they made major contributions in the presidency. While John Adams, the major thing that's remembered about him is he signed the Alien and Sedition Acts, which curbed civil liberties and were repealed under Jefferson. So why Adams, having lost re-election and having that negative issue about civil liberties, that's why he ranks so much lower when we rank presidents. But no question, John Adams had a lot to offer, and his son. Oh, I just love his son, John Quincy Adams. I really am a big fan. I always have said, you know, he wrote a diary for 68 years, from age 12 to age 80. I said, I wish I could go back in history and talk to John Quincy Adams. He's such an amazing personality.
Well, and just to, like, tie a bow in this, the other interesting thing about John Adams is, to me, is he was the first, and there have only been two times when this happened, in which a son becomes president as well.
Yes.
And also, and nobody else can claim that but the Bushes, and aside from that, he also was somebody who really, it seems to me he was a pop-off, and maybe that's why he was unpopular, and maybe that's one of the main reasons he wasn't reelected, and he had a pop-off with Jefferson where they didn't see eye to eye. But he
Because his opponent, Jefferson, in 1796, ended up by the crazy, you know, system of the new Electoral College as his VP. That's not supposed to happen, that your opposition candidate ends up as your VP.
Right, and John Adams was the first vice president. That's also usually left off. But the term thing is interesting, and certainly Kennedy's term ended under different circumstances. But Kennedy, who didn't even finish serving one term, is usually in the top 10 of...
He is, which I think he's overrated. I would not rate him in... I've told my students, I would rate him in the second 10, not the first 10. The main reason he is because, sadly, of his assassination, which should not be part of the judgment of his leadership, because that's tragic, but it has nothing to do with it, plus the Cuban Missile Crisis. But even on that, I say, if he had not messed up the Bay of Pigs, there wouldn't have been a Cuban Missile Crisis. So they look at me and they're shocked, but I say, he is overrated, but he's nice to look at, nice to listen to, beautiful family, and he was murdered, so that helps his ranking, yes.
Do you think there's a lot of parallel between John Kennedy and President Obama?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, the parallels, I guess, would be they were charismatic speakers.
Yes.
Essentially, they were elected because they really got young people into the process.
True.
And but yet, once they were in office, and maybe not John Kennedy so much this way, but he did, you know, the Bay of Pigs was certainly not a good thing. But Obama, essentially, and he admitted to this, I think, in his book, that he helped create a more polarizing Washington, that he did not understand going in that you had to schmooze more, that you had to give a little, and it created an atmosphere that we have still have today.
I think actually that polarization that you're talking about goes back further than Obama, goes back further than George W. Bush. It goes back to the early 1990s with Newt Gingrich, when he became Speaker of the House, and even before he was Speaker of the House, he promoted the idea that your opponents are enemies, not just opponents. And so, and some people have written about this, and really the idea of us and them and being total enemies goes back really to the 1990s. But yes, it continued on, it's true. So I would say that both sides, Republicans and Democrats, have contributed to that.
Are you surprised that it seems almost as if you watch news and read newspapers, that no other presidents exist except Trump and Obama, and Biden now because he is the current president, that there was such a divide in this country? You loved Barack Obama or you hated him. You loved Trump or you hated him. There is no middle ground with those two guys.
Well, also with George W. Bush when he was in office. Now he looks, quote, better, end quote, in comparison to Trump. But honestly, he was a very divisive figure, and there was really a pro and con on George W. Bush that was really much worse than, say, under his father.
I think you're right. I think by the time he left office, he was more polarizing. But to be elected twice, I think he had more middle ground in those days. I mean, I remember during the Al Gore election of 2000, people said he was the guy you would want to have a beer with more.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think they were saying it was. See, there was just with Obama, there was the group who hated him and the group who loved him. Trump had the same thing, and I don't know why those two guys were such lightning rods.
Well, I think the fact that Obama was not white was an issue for many people, and still is an issue, unfortunately. And in the case of Trump, his outrageous behavior when he was running for office against his own opponents in his own party, and then against the opposition, and his continued, you know, verbal attacks and in such an extreme way, I think, you know, I think that explains that.
So I saw a post on Facebook the other day in which somebody was slamming President Trump, and I saw one of the comments on the post. And it said, clearly this was somebody who also did not support President Trump, but they said, talk about what Biden has done good. Trump is no longer president. Stop talking about him. Are you from that school, or do you think we should be talking about the last president?
I think we have to talk about the last president because of January 6th. If it was just that he left office and peacefully accepted the result, then it would be one thing. But this continues to be an issue because it was an attack on the U.S. Capitol that killed five people and indeed threatens everybody in Congress. And we're learning more and more about it from this House committee. And I give a lot of credit to Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, who are, you know, are courageous enough to say party is not first, principle and the idea of protecting the government and democracy is first.
I want to talk about January the 6th. It continues on. We don't know at this point when it's going to end. It was supposed to end this week, but apparently new information.
No, it's going to be next week. It's
next
going to be
week.
On the 21st, I've heard, yeah.
So here we are, January 6th. Now, clearly we know which side you fall on this with this January 6th issue, but what is the hard evidence at this point that the Justice Department could indict a former president on?
Well, it's very clear what happened with Cassidy Hutchinson. The fact is that he organized this, and now we've learned more this week. I'm talking about President Trump, organized the idea of going to the U.S. Capitol and forcefully preventing the counting of the Electoral College vote and threatening the life of Vice President Mike Pence, which is stunning that somebody would do that to his own vice president, and also to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, and really all members of Congress who are on Capitol Hill, and all staff members who were on Capitol Hill, and all the law enforcement people that were there to protect them all.
Doesn't the problem, though, become that we don't have anything written by him? We don't have any audio of that. What essentially we're dealing in is hearsay, and indicting, and this would be the first time a former president has been indicted. But don't you think the Justice Department would want more than just somebody's word? Because certainly in court, Trump's going to say he didn't do it.
Well, the point is that it's not just hearsay. These are people who worked around Trump who are now reporting on what they witnessed. And so it's not really hearsay. They were there at the moment, like Cassidy Hutchinson and others. So I think the evidence is very strong. However, getting a conviction will be very difficult to get a trial. That sounds almost impossible, but I think it needs to be made clear that he caused a danger to our country and our democracy, and that he has to be held accountable, at least to be brought to trial.
You know, here are two questions about January the 6th that I cannot get answered by anybody. And certainly we now know what happened in hindsight, but the two questions are, what were the people... I get that they were trying to take over the government, but going to the Capitol and busting out the windows and taking...
And having arms on them, AR-15s
arms,
and all kinds of other kind of weapons.
Taking selfies at people's desk. What was this going to do? I mean, what were they... How was that going to take over the government? There still was a Senate. There still was a president. There still was a cabinet, which apparently we now know was considering the 25th Amendment.
Still was
a Supreme Court. What in the end? I mean, if they had gone in there and, God forbid, killed members of Congress, how would that have taken over the government?
Well, you have to realize that the Vice President and the Speaker of the House are first and second in line for the presidency after the president of the United States. So the threats against both Pence and Pelosi were trying to decapitate the people directly next in the line of succession.
Right.
That is a crime.
Right. We know what they did, but I guess what I'm saying is how would that have overthrown the government? We had a president elect. If Pence had been killed, God forbid, there would have been somebody else to step in to confirm that vote. I guess I don't understand what their point was. I don't know what. How do you take over the government? I mean, we had planes flown into buildings, which killed many more people. It didn't stop the government.
Well, but this is an attack on the government by its own leader. It's not by an outside terrorist force like on 9/11. It's a big difference.
Well, that's the other question I have. Now, certainly we have talked a lot about this January 6th rally that in which President Trump spoke at. Now, how do you encourage? We know that in the end, they did go to the Capitol and they did do bad things. But how does one man going in, if this was January 5th, because clearly nothing was, I don't remember any Democrat going on television on January 5th because of these tweets we've seen now and saying, man, tomorrow's going to be bad. I don't remember any Republican who spoke out against it saying, boy, we got trouble coming. I don't remember.
Well, Steve Bannon did.
Steve Bannon did say
on his podcast the day before.
Right, but all the people...
It's going to be thrilling tomorrow. We're going to have, you know, a wild time or something like that.
Right, but all the people who now think this was awful, and I'm not saying it wasn't awful, but I don't remember anybody saying, you know, watch out, we need more security. None of that happened.
I guess what it comes down to, people could not imagine that the rhetoric was going to lead to the action. I think it was something that was inconceivable.
Well, and maybe that's the point I'm making. How does somebody giving a speech, because he did not say go down and break in the Capitol, how do you do that? If I got up out here and I said go to City Hall and bust in, I don't know that people would do it.
Well, but you're not the president of the United States, but any president, and particularly Trump, has a lot of followers who hang on his every word, which is scary, that anybody should feel that they have to obey what a president says and follow his lead. But there's a lot of people who are very gullible and easily manipulated, and that's terrifying.
What is that about President Trump? And I said this during the last election. You can dislike him all day long, but his followers... are following him more than any other president that I've ever seen. I've never seen flags in people's yard. I've never seen hats sold like they were sold. I've never seen people gather in caravans, truck caravans, prior to an election, during a pandemic, just to support this man.
I think it just shows the base instincts in a lot of people, because you got to realize Trump promoted things that a lot of people think but do not find it easy to promote. They promoted racism, anti-Semitism, nativism, misogyny, Islamophobia, homophobia, and there are a lot of people, and we see it now with what the Supreme Court has just done on so many issues, that they're promoting issues that are dividing the country and undermining our whole system of democracy.
But,
and it's just a lot of people like that. You discover that a lot of people have ugly thoughts, and unfortunately they're affecting their children, and that's what's really scary, because you're more affected by your parents than anybody else is how you look at life.
But doesn't a lot of this go back to the election of 2016 before he was president, when Hillary made the comment of a basket of deplorables, which a lot of people say hurt her, because not all Trump supporters do believe that stuff. But that blanket keeps getting thrown on them, and I think that agitates them.
Well, but you got to realize the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and groups like that are the description I just gave you, those different adjectives. There's no question. I'm not saying that's everybody, but there's also a lot of people who just like the idea of a strong man-ish image. It's like a Mussolini kind of image. There is a lot of people who want a strong man who convinces them that their prejudices and biases and hatreds are acceptable.
What is it? why can the Democratic Party not have a leader like this?
I wouldn't want them to have a leader like this, to be honest, because I think that's dangerous. If the Democrats had a candidate like that, I would repudiate and condemn as much as a Republican.
Well, I guess what I mean is, by a candidate like that, somebody who has such support that flags are flown, hats are bought, they would follow him into, you know, war. There's not been a Democratic candidate who had that kind of appeal.
I guess you're right. I think that, since Kennedy's death, nobody has matched that. I think Ronald Reagan had that kind of support, however, in a different way, not in as much of a negative way, but I think he gained that kind of loyalty. But nobody else, really. You're right. As far as actually going for the White House or being elected president.
So what is wrong with the Democratic Party in that way?
Well, the Democratic Party is always, as Will Rogers said in the 1920s, a disorganized group, and that's why they have often failed at being able to win national government as far as the presidency. Now, I want to remind you people that from 1932 to 1994, except for 4 years, the Democrats controlled the House of Representatives for 58 out of 62 years, and all but 8 years in the Senate. But in the last 30 years, since the time of Newt Gingrich, we've had the parties very evenly split, and they go back and forth, and neither party really has an easy time in becoming in charge. So it makes it very hard. For instance, Joe Biden, let's be honest, if Joe Biden had a Congress that wasn't 50-50 Senate and only a 5-seat edge in the House, he'd be able to accomplish more. But this is not an LBJ Great Society Congress, and it's not an FDR New Deal Congress.
Well, you know, Joe Biden in and of himself is an interesting case, because a lot of people said, experts in presidential elections, that during the last election, had there not been a pandemic, most likely he would not have won. And even in the end of that presidential election, people were voting against Trump, not for Biden. He was not inspiring people to vote for him. It was just people didn't want Trump.
I think that's basically the truth. Yes, I do agree that.
So what is it, why would the Democratic Party, how could he become the front runner of the Democratic Party, I guess is what I'm saying?
Yeah, because Joe Biden represents moderation, and I think the thought was if you pick someone too far to the left, like a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, that it would not be acceptable to the country, and Joe Biden could be, and I think that's true, and that's a problem for the next election. Because I've come to the conclusion after a year and a half of Joe Biden and his rapidly aging situation that he should not run in 2024. He probably will, but I think there'll be challenges in his party if he does. And I do think that we need a new generation of leadership, and that means even Donald Trump will be in his 80s in the next term. And I don't think that's a good thing for the country. I also think the Speaker of the House and the other top House leaders and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, they're all in their 80s, low 80s. It's time to give over to a new generation. And I hope that's what's going to happen.
You know, I often wonder, how did we get to that point? How did we get to the point where we have the last two elections, presidential elections, we've elected the oldest president ever and topped it with Joe Biden? When Hillary and Trump ran against each other, they were the two oldest candidates ever. Either would have been the oldest president elected. Mm-hmm. Nancy Pelosi's in her 80s, the Speaker of the House.
Elizabeth Warren is in her mid-70s, and Bernie Sanders is past 80. Yes, you're right.
Well, what
time
happened
to move on, I would say, yes.
But where's the group that right now would be in their 50s? What happened to that group?
Well, they're in Congress, but you know, they haven't been able to make have an effect. I mean, there are people like Amy Klobuchar, I'm going to give you an example, who I think made a good impression to many. I think she's someone to pay attention to. And I also think Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is another one in that category. And I also think that Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, is another person. He's actually only 40 or 41. He's really very young. And we also have Julian Castro is another one, as just a few examples. But the question is, can any of those people, quote, take off and really gain the kind of following? But I think, I do think we need to have someone younger.
A lot of people have referred to politics in the last 20, 25 years as playing the game. that you have to play the game, you have to raise money, you have to raise the money to get elected, then you have to get in, and then you have to be able to get enough recognition to get what you want passed. And it seems like, for better or worse, the Republicans know how to play that game, and the Democrats don't. Why is that?
The Republicans are much more pragmatic. They're much better able to unite and organize. I got to give them that. The Democrats are just as Roger said, a disorganized party. I'm not making fun of it. I'm laughing. But it is true. The Democrats have always had this problem.
But why is that? You know, they had this charismatic leader, a two-term president in President Obama, but yet that did not rub off on anybody in the Senate, the Congress, and really even his vice president. As we just talked about, people were voting against Trump, not for Biden, to the point where Biden didn't even try to run for president the first time around.
Well, the reason Biden didn't run the first time is because his son, Beau, died in 2015. The theory is that if his son had not been sick and had not died, his son wanted him to run, that he would have run in 2016. And the theory is, but I don't know if it's true, that he would have defeated Hillary Clinton for the nomination. I'm not sure that would have happened, though, and that he would, and that then he would have defeated Trump. But it's all theory. We cannot be sure. I think it's a chance of that. I do think that Donald Trump feared Joe Biden the most, and that's why he was trying to indeed pressure the Ukrainian leader, and what led to his first impeachment, because I think he thought of Biden as the most difficult person to defeat.
Well, but
and
why,
it turned out that way.
Why has the Obama, at much in the way, the first time around, that the Reagan popularity, the Reagan spirit, did rub off on George H.W. Bush. He got elected president.
But then he got defeated.
He did. But I think
couldn't carry the Reagan image.
Well, but I think George, and I think even Bill Clinton would say this, George H.W. Bush's defeat really rallied around a recession in the country and also a big mistake in saying, read my lips, no new taxes. And then
plus, H. Ross Perot entered the race as an independent and gained 19% of the vote, the second most ever to Theodore Roosevelt's third party movement in 1912. Yes.
Right. But in the Biden situation, it didn't happen that way. And he doesn't seem to carry the Obama appeal. Nobody in his Hillary was his Secretary of State. Who got the rub on that, on President Obama? Because people certainly have gotten the rub off Trump. If he anoints somebody, and we've seen it here in Ohio, they come from third place in a Senate race to first place and win it.
It's hard to fully understand. I think it's going to take time for us to figure out why the Obama legacy has not been carrying on. You know, although you could say Biden being in is a carry on, but it's a tame example of the Obama legacy. But again, part of it is a 50-50 Senate. This is only the fourth time ever in history that we've had an evenly divided Senate, and that is difficult, obviously, when that happens.
Do you think one of the problems is, because I've had this conversation with several people, Bill Clinton is still alive. Bill Clinton is a president in most people's time frame at this point who are adults. Yet, because of his scandal, people seemingly forgot how great a campaigner he was and how good he was as president. I mean, there were Republicans who liked Bill Clinton. Matter of fact, the old line was, even if you voted against Bill Clinton, you cannot dislike that man. The Bushes being an example of this. He became great friends with H.W. Bush,
yes,
as well as his son. But yet, Obama doesn't have that. So Obama becomes the dominant Democrat in the conversation, when I think really if you took the Monica Lewinsky affair out, you would probably say Bill Clinton is the better president and better campaigner, would you not?
Yes, but actually I think he's overrated. I think, you know, I think people rate too much about Bill Clinton. I think, as many people said in the Democratic Party, he was not really a true Democrat. He was a Republicrat. He acted more like a Republican, and yet they turned against him on the Monica Lewinsky scandal while Newt Gingrich was having an affair with a woman, not his wife, and so was Henry Hyde and others. So I think Bill Clinton was not that outstanding a president, and he's actually fallen to number 19 on the list of the various historical groups, and political science groups. So he's in the top half, but he's not rated very well.
He's
in the top half but toward the bottom. I think he is overrated. I think his charisma is what has carried him. But actually, from the beginning, I thought he's not very trustworthy. He just seemed like he was very loose with the truth from the beginning. I sensed it right away in 1992.
But he did seem like the last president in modern times that could make deals with the other side.
Well, yes, in some cases, that's true. You're right. Yes.
Yeah, and I think, apparently, that's a miracle now, because in the last 22 years, nobody has been able to do that.
Well, there were some deals done between George W. Bush and Ted Kennedy about education in the beginning.
But nothing like what was going on.
I think 9/11 helped to promote a little unity for a while, but I agree by 2004, no, it wasn't anymore.
Well, it's interesting to me because people always cite Reagan and Tip O'Neill as the great compromise, and they could do this and get together and laugh.
Well, they did on Social Security in 1983.
They did, but it wasn't the last time, because Gingrich and Clinton did do things like that. But nobody ever cites that.
Well, because Gingrich turned against Clinton and they it became a real Donnybrook in the late 1990s.
Well, I think that
he was a hypocrite because he was doing the same thing, but he wasn't in the presidency, of course.
Right, but I think that was a moral issue. But when it came to policy, and it's even probably more of a miracle than Tip O'Neill and Reagan, because Tip O'Neill was not trying to throw Reagan out of office. Certainly, Gingrich led a far more concerted attempt against the Democrats and did get them out of Congress. But yet, even after that and all the horrible things he said about Bill Clinton, they could meet and make deals.
Yes. Well, you know, that's an interesting thing now about this theory about what Joe Biden is supposedly doing with Mitch McConnell. It's a controversy that apparently he's going to move forward on a judgeship nomination of a person who is anti-abortion. That's Mitch McConnell's favorite in Kentucky, and there's a lot of outrage about it. But supposedly the deal is that McConnell, I don't know if I would trust him, that he will allow other judgeships and other ambassadorial appointments that Biden wants to move forward. And its question is, should the Democrats agree to one more case of a person much like Clarence Thomas or Samuel Alito, and not for the Supreme Court but for the lower courts, in order to make other appointments that he can fill while the Democrats have control? So it's going to be an interesting moment to see what happens and how the Democrats react to this if Joe Biden follows through, and I gather he is. It's not official, but it sounds like he's going to move on that appointment that's going to outrage loyal Democrats.
When we have over $4 gas prices, and in some cases over $5 gas prices, and we have inflation of, I think, 9% is what I was reading.
9.1%.
Is there any way, until that is fixed, that any Democrat is going to get elected? Unless they are in a completely...
But I think the issue of January 6th, I think, is a big one, and the issue of crime and the gun issue and the abortion issue, these are things that can certainly make people come out to vote, but it's not going to be easy. Midterm elections, the party in the White House usually loses seats, but if they lose seats in the House, they only have a five-seat edge, they're going to lose it, and the Senate 50-50, but I have to say, a number of these Senate appointments, or Senate elections, not appointments, are actually seemingly going toward the Democrats. Right now, it looks like in Ohio, Tim Ryan has quite an edge over J.D. Vance, and it's supposedly the same in Georgia for the Democrats, and supposedly in Pennsylvania. We'll have to see what really happens. But it looks as if the Republicans have allowed themselves to pick Trump-endorsed people who are seen as incompetent or outrageous, and that it's going to affect how the Senate ends up, and that the Senate may end up with more Democrats than 50.
The overturning of Roe versus Wade is interesting. People will debate that forever. It was treated like one of the big stories of our time. But interestingly enough, and the Democrats are saying this, Biden said it in a speech just a few days ago, that if we are able to keep the Congress, if we are able to get a bigger majority, just a few senators in the Senate,
yes,
we could reinstate this. We could codify this. But yet, it's not enough for them to do that. As you just said, they're going to lose the House, possibly lose the Senate. So is really Roe versus Wade, we make it a big issue, we make it a huge thing, and people certainly have strong feelings either way, but apparently it's not something that drives people to the voting booth.
Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see, what happens by November. It's going to be... most interesting midterm election. The question is, will enough young people and women and even men who agree with them make that the issue that might not have voted or might have, you know, might not be interested? We don't know. It's one of the many things. It's certainly the most significant midterm election in a long time. The one other thing I want to say, though, is even if they codify it, the trouble with it is that they could do it, and 2, 4, 6, or 8 years from now, if the opposition party gains control, they could decide to, you know, to negate it and codify the opposite. So this is an issue that's not going to go away.
Why was it never codified, however people say it? Why was it never done? You know, Obama had the majority in the Senate and the Congress.
He only had the majority in as far as in both houses in 9 and 10. After that, of course, the House went Republican and then the Senate later.
Under Clinton as well.
Yes.
Well, why was it never done? Everybody
well,
knew it was a hot-button
issue.
There
were different priorities. In 93, 94, the big one was health care, Hillary care, which went nowhere, and also gun regulations, which went through. And then in 9 and 10 was, again, health care. And, of course, looking back, maybe it shouldn't have been, but it was felt that health care affected everyone and that it was necessary. And in the case of Obama, it did get through.
You know, you talk about the difference between the Republican and Democratic Party. Something that's interesting to me, President Trump was defeated in the last election, whether people believe that or don't believe that at this point. He was defeated in the last election, yet he's thinking about running. Most people think he's going to run again. He would be the oldest president ever elected if he did win. Yet the Republican Party doesn't really give an opinion on it. They don't say, don't do it, do it. They don't do that. Now, I heard the other day, and again, rumors are rumors, but because of overturning of Roe versus Wade, that Hillary Clinton, there are rumors, oh, she's going to run again. Probably.
But see,
that's the Democratic. That doesn't happen in the Republican Party. They don't say, oh, my goodness gracious, please don't run again. Why not let the voters figure it out? If she wants to run again and the voters say, yes, we want her as a candidate, go ahead.
I don't think she could win if she ran. And she's also, she would be in the 80s in that term. She was born in 1947, so she would be 77 in 24. So
yeah,
but in her 80s by the end of the term.
But isn't she younger than...
We need this. We need younger.
Yeah, but isn't she younger than Trump and Biden?
A year younger than Trump and 5 years younger than Biden.
Well, there's my point. Why? But we're not saying, oh my goodness, Biden don't run. We're not saying, oh my goodness,
see,
Trump.
I am saying, and I'm a Joe Biden fan, and I've always liked the fact that I always thought of him as a hero, but I think it's really necessary that he not run again. I've already said that, and I really believe that, but it doesn't mean it won't happen, but I think there'll be challenges, just like the rest of Bush won, and Carter, and Ford. I think they'll have at least a contest.
Well, my point wasn't so much about Hillary. It's that the Democratic Party seems to do that with their big names. They see, before it even happens, they say, oh boy, don't do that. We don't need that. Don't do that. The Republican Party seems to just say, okay, well, let's see what happens. The voters will decide.
Well, if she decides to run, she'll run, but I don't think she'll be the nominee. That's the way. And I don't see her opposing Joe Biden unless he backs out of the race. If he says, I'm not going to run, then it's wide open. I have a list here of 25 Democrats who might run and 25 Republicans who might run. I'm not saying they're all going to announce, but I think it's a good chance we're going to have, at least in the Republican Party, 15 to 20 who will announce.
Who's number one on both lists, the most likely name?
Other than Trump or Biden?
Yeah.
Well, it seems in the Republican Party, Ron DeSantis, the governor of my state, who I think is horrendous, absolutely horrible, but he's smart and he's young and he appeals to a lot of people who like Donald Trump, so I think he's the number one candidate. However, I would prefer, but who says I have any say over it, that others be considered that are not pro-Trump, and that would include Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney, the two members of the House Committee. I think, you know, both facing threats constantly. And that bothers me, by the way. Kinzinger released a whole group of phone calls to his office threatening him, his life and that of his family. And not one peep from Kevin McCarthy or anybody else. But right away, when Justice, when Justice Kavanaugh is interrupted at dinner and, you know, it has to leave early, everybody in the Republican Party saying, oh, this is terrible. But is it not terrible that Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney are facing death threats?
Well,
I'd like to see them run. I also think people such as Larry Hogan, the outgoing governor of Maryland, Chris Sununu, still governor of New Hampshire, also I think would be good. And I also think at the same time, even Mitt Romney coming back, why not? He'd also be reaching 80 in the next term, but why not Mitt Romney
now,
or Ben Sasse, the senator from Nebraska? These are people who are not Trump supporters. I think the Republican Party needs to get away from Trump and from Trump supporters, but I don't know if they're going
to
do it.
Now, see, this goes back to my point that we just were talking about, Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney has lost twice. As a matter of fact, he didn't even make it out of the primary one time. Hillary, exactly the same record, it would be exactly in the same age group, but yet Hillary is poison, Mitt Romney's on a list of people who should possibly run. Now, what is the difference?
Well, again, I think it's just, I don't know how to answer that. It's just Democrats maybe are suicidal.
I don't understand.
The same people all the time.
tell me one woman.
I'm not laughing, but it's funny when you think about it.
Well, but what? Certainly more people in this country know Hillary Clinton than Mitt Romney. Certainly she has been Secretary of State. Mitt Romney was not. He got turned down for the job by Trump. She was the
lucky
first.
Lucky for him, by the way.
Yeah, well, she
got turned down.
she was first lady for 8 years.
Yeah.
She was senator of New York during the terrorist terrorist attack on this country, biggest terrorist attack. Now, why in the world, and what woman in the Democratic Party has more name recognition than Hillary Clinton?
No one, but of course Elizabeth Warren does have a lot of support as well, Elizabeth Warren, and also Amy Klobuchar to a lesser extent.
I guess what I'm saying is, how could Mitt Romney possibly win and Hillary Clinton, even the sight of her name, is, oh boy, that can't happen.
Well, I don't really know if either could win, but I think the Republican Party is a party that if they were to move away from Trump, they might think that Romney would be the best pick because he has a certain image about him and, you know, and he comes across as strong in his views. But honestly, I don't think he's even going to run. Probably not. He's not hinting he's going to run. But the rumors about Hillary still are there, yes.
Yeah, so when did we stop telling people to even run? If they are unpopular, they won't win.
Well, because it just adds to the muddle of too many people running. But actually, the last few rounds, we've had 15, 20 or more on each side anyway, particularly on the Republican side. And I think we have a whole group of people in the Senate and some governors on the Republican side who are going to announce, I said they're going to get very far, but they're going to, but I think Ron DeSantis right now would be the front runner, at least in image, but I hope he doesn't get very far.
What happened to all the young Democrats in that crowded 2020 field? Where did they all go?
Well, I don't think they're necessarily gone. And, you know, I do think that, you know, Pete Buttigieg is someone to watch. I think Julian Castro is someone to watch. I also think, actually, I have to add someone from your state who's in his 70s, but some people are rumoring that Sherrod Brown, your senator, your Democratic senator, might run, but he's also a bit on the older side. He's in his early 70s. But there are some who think of him as someone who has thought about running but has not run. All I know is this, and Jay Inslee also, who ran last time, now is another person, and Cory Booker, and of course our Vice President Kamala Harris. People should not dismiss her completely.
Is President Trump going to be indicted? We've seen the January 6th committee is just about over. Looks like it's going to wrap up next week. Is he going to be indicted at the end of this?
I tend to think yes, but whether he'll lead to conviction is going to be very hard. But I think if he is not, then it indicates in the future another political leader could use the excuse that, look, you know, nothing happened with him, so therefore they could do the same idea of a January 6th insurrection. I think for the record of history, he has to be at least facing trial.
If he does not get indicted by Merrick Garland and the Justice Department, is that really the end of the Democrats for this coming election cycle as well as the next presidential cycle?
I'm not sure what you're saying. That you're saying that he's indicted that there's any Democratic chance for the next election?
Yeah, because not only the gas prices and the inflation that would have to be fixed, but this is Joe Biden's attorney general, and we went through these public, you know, hearings that people are watching, and at the end of it...
The attorney general is appointed, but he's independent of the president. He's not tied to the president. It's supposed to be, the justice department is supposed to be independent.
So it
might be connected that way, but it's not as if Joe Biden can say to him, do this.
No, but at this point, if Democrats are so sure that President Trump committed a crime here, and the attorney general does not indict him, doesn't that look like, that was a big waste of time.
Well, I think you're probably right. I do believe he will be indicted, but of course, a trial and conviction, who knows? You know, that's probably going to be almost impossible. But I think for the record of history, just like two impeachments, it needs to be done.
Is Trump going to run again?
I don't know. The indications are he is. I think he might announce and then he'll drop out. I don't see him really going for it. I think it's more an ego thing, and I don't think he wants the job. I don't think he has an interest in the details of the job. He never really did. Actually, it's the people around him that kept him above water because he didn't know what the hell he was doing at the time. I tend to think he might announce, but it doesn't mean he's going to follow through all through the primaries. I mean, we'll absolutely have challenges, no question.
Dr. Ronald Fineman, it's always a lot of fun. You can catch him every Wednesday with Glenn Coble from 12:15 to 1 p.m. on a Progressive Life right here on WWGH Radio. Always a lively conversation.
Yes, thank you so much. This has been great.
Hey, thank you, Doctor. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Dr. Ronald Fineman, you know, you can catch him on Glenn's show. I'm sure you listened to it yesterday. He's always fascinating to have on. A lot of people agree with his opinions. A lot of people do not agree with his opinions. But it's current events. It's something to talk about. But what we're going to talk about next hour is the Charter City, and we're going to have some guests on who are going to play some big parts in this process that is coming up over the next few weeks. Will this get on the ballot? Do people want it on the ballot? We'll find out. Don't forget Glenn Coble today from 10:15 a.m. until 1 p.m. on this station. Don't turn away. You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Back in 15 minutes.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio. The talking place. The 107-year-old viral video sensation, Virginia McLaurin, on meeting President and Mrs. Barack Obama.
You said, now you'd be able to die happy. Why did that mean so much?
Well, you see, I'm 106.